2,400,000,000 years ago, the first mass extinction in the history of life occurred on Earth. Not from a meteor, not from volcanism, not from climate change, although the climate did change catastrophically. It was caused by a living organism, a tiny photosynthetic microbe smaller than the width of a human hair, which found a way to split water molecules and release the toxic byproduct of its metabolism into the surrounding environment. That byproduct was oxygen, and it killed almost everything that had lived on Earth up to that point. Then it triggered an ice age 300 million years long. Then it created the conditions for every complex animal on this planet, including you. This is the story of the most successful ecological catastrophe in the history of life on Earth. Before we go any further, please subscribe to this channel. Your support really helps us to continue our work. Thank you. There is a mental adjustment required before this story can be told properly, and it involves setting aside one of the deepest assumptions we carry about the world. We live in an oxygen world. We breathe oxygen. Our cells run on oxygen. Our entire metabolic architecture is built around the combustion of organic molecules, with oxygen as the terminal electron acceptor. The air is 21% oxygen by volume. It has been that way, approximately, for the past 500 million years. We are so thoroughly adapted to oxygen that we cannot survive without it for more than a few minutes. To us, oxygen is not merely normal. It is life itself. But this is a very recent and very parochial perspective. For the first 2 billion years of Earth's history, for more than half the time that life has existed on this planet, there was essentially no free oxygen in the atmosphere or the oceans. The Earth was a profoundly, deeply, chemically reducing world. The atmosphere was dominated by nitrogen and carbon dioxide, with significant amounts of methane and hydrogen and water vapor, and essentially zero molecular oxygen. The oceans were not the clear blue water we know today. They were warm, chemically rich, and pervasively colored by dissolved iron. The same dissolved iron that would later be stripped from the ocean by the oxygen that was about to arrive. The organisms that dominated this world were anaerobic. They not only survived without oxygen, they required its absence. For them, oxygen was not life. It was death. Understanding this world and the life that inhabited it is the essential prerequisite for understanding what happened 2.4 billion years ago. And understanding what happened 2.4 billion years ago is, ultimately, understanding why you are here. The Archean Aeon, the interval from approximately 4 billion to 2.5 billion years ago, was the golden age of anaerobic life. The diversity and abundance of anaerobic organisms in the Archean Ocean was extraordinary. Methanogens, the ancient archaea that consume hydrogen and carbon dioxide and exhale methane, had been operating since the very earliest chapter of life's history, generating the greenhouse warming that kept the early Earth from freezing under its faint young sun. Sulfate-reducing bacteria consumed sulfate from the seawater and produced hydrogen sulfide as their metabolic waste, filling the ocean with a chemical richness that supported dozens of other metabolic strategies. Iron-reducing bacteria used dissolved ferric iron as their terminal electron acceptor, reducing it to ferrous iron and releasing chemical energy in the process. The Archean Ocean was a chemical reactor of extraordinary complexity, running on the energy of volcanic activity, solar radiation, and the chemical gradients between the hot deep ocean and the cooler surface water. And it was populated by an astonishing variety of organisms, each exploiting a different chemical niche, each contributing to the biogeochemical cycling that maintained the ocean's chemical balance. The methanogens of the Archean deserve particular attention because they are directly implicated in what came after. These organisms, members of the domain Archaea, phylogenetically ancient beyond any modern intuition, had been operating as the primary producers of atmospheric methane for most of the Archean eon. Their metabolism is elegantly simple. They consume molecular hydrogen and carbon dioxide and produce methane and water. In the anoxic Archean Ocean, with abundant hydrogen from hydrothermal vents and volcanic activity, and abundant CO2 from volcanic outgassing, the methanogens thrived everywhere. Their methane output was the primary greenhouse gas maintaining the warmth of a planet under a sun 30% dimmer than today. As we explored in our previous video on the faint young sun paradox, and their ecological dominance was so complete that the entire Archean carbon cycle was structured around their activity. The iron-reducing bacteria represent an equally important component of the Archean ecosystem. The Archean Ocean contained dissolved ferrous iron in concentrations on the order of hundreds of micromolar, roughly 10,000 times the concentration in the modern oxygenated ocean. This dissolved iron was available because the Archean Ocean was reducing. In the absence of oxygen, iron remained in its soluble ferrous form rather than being oxidized to insoluble ferric iron. Iron-reducing bacteria exploited this abundance, using ferric iron at the thin oxidized interfaces between the anoxic water and whatever small amounts of oxidant were locally available as their terminal electron acceptor. Their metabolic waste was ferrous iron, which simply dissolved back into the water column and remained available for the next oxidation reduction cycle. It was a perfect closed loop, running continuously for over a billion years. The sulfate-reducing bacteria occupied another major metabolic niche. In regions of the Archean Ocean where sulfate was available, primarily in the shallow surface waters where photochemical processes produced small amounts of sulfate from volcanic sulfur dioxide, these organisms consumed sulfate and organic carbon and produced hydrogen sulfide. The hydrogen sulfide they released contributed to the richly chemically complex smell that would have characterized the Archean Ocean, a world that smelled strongly of rotten eggs overlaid with the organic sweetness of vast microbial mats, a world utterly alien to any modern sensibility. Yet it was in this pungent, iron-rich, oxygen-free world that life spent its first 2 billion years, evolving the basic biochemical toolkit, the genetic code, the ribosome, the cell membrane, the core metabolic pathways, that all subsequent life, including ourselves, inherited and built upon. The total biomass of the Archean biosphere is impossible to estimate with precision. But the evidence from the geological record, the abundance and global distribution of stromatolites, the scale of the banded iron formations that record biological oxygen production, the carbon isotope signatures of ancient organic matter, suggests that the Archean Ocean was biologically productive and densely populated at the microbial level. This was not a sparse or marginal biosphere. It was a fully functioning, globally integrated ecosystem that had been operating for approximately 2 billion years before the cyanobacteria began to change it. What was entirely absent from this world was the metabolic strategy that would eventually destroy it. The oxidation of organic molecules using molecular oxygen as the electron acceptor, aerobic respiration, the biochemical process that powers every cell in your body, does not appear to have existed in the Archean. The reason is simple. There was no free oxygen to use. The Earth's atmosphere and oceans were reducing environments, and while there were many organisms capable of oxidizing organic molecules using alternative electron acceptors like sulfate, iron, or carbon dioxide, none of them had access to the extraordinarily powerful oxidant that is molecular oxygen. Aerobic metabolism was not just absent from the Archean biosphere. It was impossible because the substrate it requires simply did not exist. The invention of oxygenic photosynthesis, the biochemical process that uses sunlight to split water molecules and release oxygen as a byproduct, was therefore one of the most consequential biological innovations in the history of life on Earth. And like many of the most important biological innovations, it appeared not as a grand evolutionary design, but as an accidental solution to a specific biochemical problem in a lineage of microbes that had no way of knowing what they were starting. The ancestors of the cyanobacteria, the organisms that would eventually oxygenate the Earth, were photosynthetic bacteria that used reduced sulfur compounds, hydrogen gas, or organic molecules as the source of electrons for photosynthesis. These anoxygenic photosynthesizers operated in a world where oxygen was absent, and they were well adapted to that world. But in some lineage of these early photosynthetic organisms, at some point that geneticists now estimate at approximately 2.9 billion years ago, based on molecular clock analyses, a remarkable biochemical innovation appeared. A new protein complex, the one that biologists now call photosystem II, evolved that was capable of using water molecules as the electron donor for photosynthesis, rather than sulfur compounds or hydrogen. Water is one of the most abundant molecules on Earth's surface. It is also one of the most chemically stable. Splitting a water molecule requires significantly more energy than splitting hydrogen sulfide. But once the biochemical machinery to do it existed, the implications were transformative. The organism that could split water had access to an essentially unlimited source of electrons for photosynthesis, because the oceans were an essentially unlimited reservoir of water molecules, and the byproduct of splitting water, the waste product excreted as a consequence of using water as the electron source, was molecular oxygen. To the early cyanobacteria, oxygen was metabolic garbage. They did not use it, did not benefit from it, and had no more awareness of what they were releasing into their environment than a modern cow has awareness of the methane it exhales. They were simply doing what they had evolved to do, capturing sunlight, splitting water, fixing carbon dioxide into organic molecules, and releasing oxygen as waste. The fact that this waste product would eventually transform the chemistry of the entire planet, kill the majority of all living organisms, trigger the longest ice age in Earth's history and ultimately create the conditions for complex animal life was entirely invisible to the organisms that caused it. Evolution has no foresight. It has no plan. The cyanobacteria did not save the world. They were simply the most successful microbes on a shallow, sunlit sea. And the consequences of their success cascaded through the entire planetary system in ways that took hundreds of millions of years to fully unfold. But those consequences did not unfold immediately. This is one of the most important and most recently revised aspects of the Great Oxidation story. And it involves a mystery that puzzled Earth scientists for decades. If the cyanobacteria evolved oxygenic photosynthesis approximately 2.9 billion years ago, why did the oxygen they produced not accumulate in the atmosphere until approximately 2.33 billion years ago? Why was there a gap of approximately 560 million years between the evolution of oxygen production and the accumulation of oxygen in the atmosphere? 560 million years is not a brief delay. It is longer than the entire history of complex animal life on Earth. For nearly 600 million years, the cyanobacteria were producing oxygen, and the oxygen was going somewhere, but not into the atmosphere. The detective story of why oxygen was delayed for 560 million years is worth dwelling on, because it reveals how geology, geochemistry, and biology were interacting in ways that took decades of research to untangle. The first clue came from the banded iron formations themselves. These extraordinary rocks, found in every major Precambrian craton on every continent, forming the economic foundation of the global steel industry, are visually striking even to a non-geologist. They consist of alternating red and grey bands, typically centimeters to decimeters thick, in which the red layers are iron oxide and the grey layers are silica-rich chert. The banding records a rhythmic alternation between conditions under which iron was being oxidized and precipitated and conditions under which it was not. And the scale of the iron oxide deposits implies that truly enormous quantities of oxygen were consumed in their formation over hundreds of millions of years. The total quantity of iron deposited in banded iron formations has been estimated at approximately 5 times 10 to the 20 grams. To oxidize this much iron from its soluble ferrous form to its insoluble ferric form requires approximately 1.3 times 10 to the 20 grams of oxygen. For context, the total mass of oxygen in today's atmosphere is approximately 1.2 times 10 to the 21 grams, roughly 10 times the amount consumed in making the banded iron formations. In other words, the banded iron formations represent the consumption of approximately 1/10 of the current atmospheric oxygen inventory, all of it produced by photosynthesis and consumed by iron oxidation before any could escape to the atmosphere. The scale of the iron buffer is almost beyond comprehension. But the iron buffer alone cannot explain the full 560 million year delay. Geochemical calculations show that the iron buffer should have been exhausted in a shorter time than the actual delay suggests, implying that other sinks for oxygen were also operating. The organic carbon burial sink was one of them. Every organic carbon molecule buried in Archean marine sediments without being oxidized represented a molecule of CO2 that had been removed from the carbon cycle by photosynthesis without the corresponding oxygen being consumed by respiration, which is equivalent to the net release of oxygen from the biosphere. But in the anoxic Archean Ocean, much of this buried organic carbon was remineralized by anaerobic processes, rather than being permanently buried, limiting the net oxygen source from organic carbon burial. The third sink, the one that the MIT research of February 2026 identified, was biological consumption by early aerobic respirers living in the immediate vicinity of cyanobacterial mats. These early consumers were, in effect, completing the photosynthesis respiration cycle locally, preventing the oxygen from diffusing away from the cyanobacterial mat surface into the broader anoxic ocean. Their enzymatic efficiency at consuming oxygen as fast as it was produced maintained a chemical equilibrium in which the oxygen existed only transiently and locally, never accumulating to concentrations that could be transported to the atmosphere. The geological evidence for this biological buffer is found in the chemical signatures of the late Archean Ocean. Certain trace metal distributions in late Archean marine sediments show patterns consistent with episodic local oxygen production, what geochemists call whiffs of oxygen, occurring hundreds of millions of years before the Great Oxidation Event. These whiffs represent the momentary local exceedance of the biotic, and abiotic oxygen sinks around cyanobacterial mat communities, providing a preview of the chemistry that would eventually transform the entire atmosphere. They also confirm that the biological and chemical buffers were operating at or near their capacity throughout the late Archean, holding back the oxygen from planetary accumulation while locally allowing its existence in trace concentrations. The answer to this mystery has multiple layers, and the most recent research has added a new and surprising layer that fundamentally changes the story. The first layer involves the chemical state of the Archean Ocean. The iron-rich ocean of the Archean was an enormous chemical buffer for oxygen. Dissolved ferrous iron, the reduced soluble form of iron, is present in the Archean Ocean in concentrations that were approximately 10,000 times higher than in the modern ocean. When oxygen released by cyanobacteria dissolved into the seawater, it immediately reacted with this dissolved ferrous iron, oxidizing it to insoluble ferric iron, iron oxide, which precipitated out of the water column and settled to the seafloor. The geological record of this process is the banded iron formations, the extraordinary deposits of alternating iron oxide and silica layers that are found in Precambrian rocks on every continent and that represent one of the most economically significant geological formations on Earth. The iron ore mines of the Pilbara in Western Australia, the iron ranges of Michigan and Minnesota, the iron deposits of the Minas Gerais in Brazil. All of these are banded iron formations, the chemical archive of the planet's desperate attempt to absorb the oxygen being released by the cyanobacteria before it could escape into the atmosphere. Those same formations, the iron ranges of Michigan, the Pilbara, the Minas Gerais, are the economic foundation of the global steel industry today. The bridges and skyscrapers of the modern world are built from the oxidized iron that cyanobacteria produced, trying to kill everything alive. The organic carbon buffer was the second major sink for Archean oxygen. When cyanobacteria photosynthesize, they produce not only oxygen, but organic carbon compounds, the biomass of their cells. When these cells die and sink to the seafloor, their organic carbon is exposed to whatever oxidants are available in the sediment. In an oxygen-rich ocean, the organic carbon would be rapidly oxidized back to carbon dioxide by aerobic respiration. But in the Archean anoxic ocean, the organic carbon accumulated in the sediment, where it could subsequently react with dissolved oxygen from the surface water. This organic carbon burial acted as an additional sink for oxygen, consuming it before it could escape to the atmosphere. And then, in February of 2026, a research team at MIT published a study that added a third and genuinely surprising layer to the story. The team, led by geobiologist Tanya Bosak and postdoctoral researcher Fatima Hussein, used a novel approach. They mapped the sequences of a key oxygen processing enzyme called cytochrome oxidase across several thousand modern species, tracing the enzyme's evolutionary history using molecular clock analysis to determine when it first evolved. Cytochrome oxidase is the enzyme that sits at the end of the aerobic respiratory chain. It is the molecular machine that takes the oxygen delivered to the cell and uses it as the terminal electron acceptor in the energy-generating process of respiration. Without cytochrome oxidase, aerobic respiration is impossible. The finding was startling. The MIT team determined that cytochrome oxidase first evolved during the Mesoarchean, the geological interval from approximately 3.2 to 2.8 billion years ago, hundreds of millions of years before the Great Oxidation Event. Almost immediately after the cyanobacteria evolved the ability to produce oxygen, other organisms evolved the ability to use it. These early aerobic respirers, living in the vicinity of the cyanobacterial mats, were consuming the oxygen almost as fast as it was being produced, acting as an additional biological buffer that helped maintain the anoxic conditions of the broader ocean. Even as the cyanobacteria were releasing oxygen at their local scale. As co-author Fatima Hussein stated, this does dramatically change the story of aerobic respiration, not something that evolved in response to the Great Oxidation Event, but something that evolved to exploit the oxygen being produced by cyanobacteria hundreds of millions of years before that oxygen reached the atmosphere. The implication is profound. For 560 million years, the oxygen-producing cyanobacteria and the oxygen-consuming aerobic respirers existed in a kind of local equilibrium, a microscopic arms race in which oxygen was produced and consumed in roughly equal measure at the local scale, while the broader global ocean remained anoxic. The oxygen economy of the late Archean was not simply a geochemical story of iron buffers and organic carbon sinks. It was also a biological story of producers and consumers locked in a balance that maintained the existing chemical order of the planet for hundreds of millions of years. What broke this balance? What finally allowed oxygen to accumulate in the atmosphere 2.33 billion years ago is the question that connects the geochemical story to the biological story. And here again, the most recent research has provided important new insights. In November of 2025, a team led by Dilan Ratnayake at Okayama University published a paper in the journal Communications, Earth and Environment that identified two previously underappreciated factors that had been limiting the growth of cyanobacteria during the late Archean: nickel and urea. The early Archean ocean was relatively rich in dissolved nickel, a trace metal that is essential for the growth of methanogens, the methane-producing archaea. High nickel concentrations in the early ocean supported thriving methanogen populations, and those methanogens consumed hydrogen and competed with the early cyanobacteria for resources. As the Archean proceeded, and the seafloor chemistry changed with the cooling of Earth's interior and the progressive evolution of tectonic processes, nickel levels in the ocean declined. The declining nickel starved the methanogens, reducing their population and their competitive pressure on the cyanobacteria. Simultaneously, the concentration of urea, a nitrogen compound that had been limiting the nitrogen supply available to cyanobacteria, also declined as the ocean chemistry evolved. With both of these constraints relaxed, the cyanobacterial populations exploded. Their growth rates increased. Their oxygen production accelerated. The iron buffer and the biological consumers could no longer keep up, and the oxygen began to accumulate. The picture that emerges from these discoveries is not the simple story of a single chemical threshold being crossed. It is the story of multiple overlapping constraints, each one holding the oxygen back, each one eventually failing. The iron buffer progressively depleted as banded iron formations accumulated on the seafloor, the nickel levels declining as the tectonic character of the Earth evolved, the urea limitations relaxing as the ocean chemistry shifted, and the biological consumers overwhelmed by the accelerating production. The Great Oxidation Event was not a single event. It was the result of hundreds of millions of years of preparation, the cumulative consequence of a planet slowly exhausting its capacity to suppress the oxygen being steadily released by its own biology. And when the oxygen finally arrived in quantity in the atmosphere, approximately 2.33 billion years ago, the consequences were immediate and catastrophic. For the anaerobic organisms that had dominated the biosphere for 3 billion years, the chemistry of what was about to happen to them deserves a precise description. These reactive oxygen species attack the lipids of cell membranes, the proteins of the metabolic machinery, and, most critically, the DNA itself. A hydroxyl radical encountering a DNA molecule will react with it essentially on contact, breaking chemical bonds, modifying bases, and disrupting the information content of the genetic code. For an organism that has no enzymes evolved to neutralize reactive oxygen species, no superoxide dismutase, no catalase, no peroxidase, the appearance of free oxygen in its environment is equivalent to a continuous assault on its cellular machinery at the molecular level. The anaerobic organisms of the Archean had no such defenses. They had evolved in an anoxic world, and the enzymes for dealing with oxygen toxicity had never been under selection pressure in their lineages. They were, in the most profound biological sense, defenseless. When the oxygen began to accumulate in the atmosphere and dissolve into the surface ocean, it spread through the environment of organisms that had no evolutionary preparation for its toxicity. The result was the largest mass extinction in the history of life on Earth. we cannot count the dead. The Archean fossil record is sparse, and the organisms that dominated the Archean biosphere were mostly soft-bodied and microscopic, leaving traces that are difficult to interpret with confidence. But the scale of the catastrophe is implicit in what we know about the chemistry of the event. The Great Oxidation Event was not a regional or local perturbation. It transformed the chemistry of the entire planetary atmosphere. From a reducing, methane-rich, essentially oxygen-free system to an oxidizing, oxygen-containing system, in geological terms, quite rapidly, over a span of perhaps a few tens of millions of years. No environment on Earth's surface was immune to this change. Every shallow marine environment, every surface ocean ecosystem, every tidal flat and coastal lagoon that had been oxygenated by the accumulating oxygen was rendered lethal to the obligate anaerobes that had inhabited it. The anaerobes were not wiped out completely. They survived in the refugia that remained anoxic. The deep ocean, the anaerobic layers of marine sediments, the anoxic zones of stratified lakes, and eventually the digestive tracts of animals. Those refugia still exist today, and the descendants of the Archean anaerobes still inhabit them. In your gut, in the methane-producing bacteria of rice paddies and wetlands, in the sulfate-reducing organisms of deep marine sediments. But the domains of anaerobic life that once stretched across the entirety of Earth's surface were reduced, in the geological blink of an eye, to scattered enclaves at the margins of the new oxygen world. The specific biochemistry of oxygen toxicity is worth understanding in some detail, because it illuminates why the Great Oxidation Event was so devastating and why the vast majority of Archean organisms had no defense against it. Molecular oxygen itself, the diatomic O2 that makes up 21% of today's atmosphere, is not particularly reactive at biological temperatures. It requires activation to become the dangerous oxidant that kills anaerobic cells. That activation happens spontaneously in biological systems through a series of electron transfer reactions involving the same electron carriers that cells use for energy metabolism. When an electron from the cellular electron transport chain is transferred to molecular oxygen, it produces the superoxide radical, O2, with an extra electron. Superoxide is significantly more reactive than molecular oxygen and can damage iron sulfur proteins, a class of proteins that are particularly abundant in anaerobic organisms, because they evolved in the iron-rich Archean environment. When superoxide reacts with hydrogen peroxide, itself a product of further oxygen reduction, through the Fenton reaction, it produces the hydroxyl radical, perhaps the most reactive species known to chemistry. The hydroxyl radical reacts with essentially every biological molecule it contacts, with rate constants approaching the diffusion limit, meaning it reacts as fast as it can physically encounter molecules. Its primary targets in cells are lipid membranes, proteins, and DNA. A single hydroxyl radical can initiate a chain reaction of lipid peroxidation that destroys the integrity of the cell membrane, a series of protein oxidations that inactivates enzymes, and a cascade of DNA modifications that corrupts the genetic information of the cell. Modern aerobic organisms cope with these reactive oxygen species through a suite of specialized enzymes. Superoxide dismutase converts superoxide to hydrogen peroxide. Catalase converts hydrogen peroxide to water and oxygen. Various peroxidases neutralize other peroxides. And a complex system of antioxidant small molecules, vitamin C, vitamin E, glutathione, provides additional protection against oxidative damage. These enzymes and antioxidants are so fundamental to aerobic life that they are virtually universal among oxygen-tolerant organisms found in bacteria, archaea, plants, animals, and fungi. Their presence in the genomes of organisms that evolved after the Great Oxidation Event represents the evolutionary response to the selection pressure imposed by oxygen toxicity. The Archean anaerobes had none of these defenses. They had evolved in an oxygen-free world, and none of the enzymes for oxygen detoxification had been under selection pressure in their lineages. When oxygen appeared in their environment, their iron-sulfur proteins were inactivated, their membranes were peroxidized, their DNA was damaged, and their metabolic machinery was disrupted in ways they had no capacity to repair. The effect was not gradual or subtle. For obligate anaerobes exposed to oxygen concentrations comparable to those in a modern aerobic environment, cell death occurs within minutes to hours. The rising oxygen concentrations of the Great Oxidation Event represented a spreading wave of lethality moving through the biosphere at the pace of the atmospheric change. Slow by human standards, catastrophic by biological ones. The organisms that survived were those that could retreat to anoxic refugia faster than the oxygen arrived, or those that happened to possess the rare mutations that conferred some tolerance to oxidative stress. The deep ocean remained anoxic for much longer than the surface. The Great Oxidation Event oxygenated the shallow marine and terrestrial environments, but the deep ocean did not become fully oxygenated until much later, perhaps as recently as the Cambrian period. The anoxic deep ocean was the primary refuge for the Archean anaerobes during the oxygenation, and their descendants remain there today, in the anoxic sediments beneath the seafloor, where sulfate-reducing bacteria, iron-reducing bacteria, and methanogens still carry out the same metabolic reactions that their ancestors performed in the Archean world. There is no consensus on exactly what fraction of the Archean biosphere was eliminated by the Great Oxidation Event, because the sparse Archean fossil record does not allow the kind of quantitative species-level analysis that paleontologists use to measure the severity of the later Phanerozoic mass extinctions. But the qualitative case for a catastrophic biological impact is overwhelming. A chemical change of the magnitude of the Great Oxidation Event, transforming the redox state of the entire planetary atmosphere from reducing to oxidizing, would have rendered lethal the surface environments of virtually every obligate anaerobe alive at the time. The extinction was not the largest in the history of complex animal life, which is the usual metric for discussing mass extinctions. It was the largest in the history of life. Period. The Permian extinction eliminated perhaps 90 to 96% of marine species. The Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction eliminated approximately 3/4 of all species. The Great Oxidation Event, may have eliminated a comparable or greater fraction of the total diversity of life on Earth. But because the organisms it eliminated were microscopic and their fossil record is incomplete, the event has historically received far less attention than the later extinctions that killed large, visible, and geologically well-preserved organisms. The concurrent climate catastrophe adds an additional dimension to the story. As the oxygen accumulated in the atmosphere, it began reacting with the methane that had been the dominant greenhouse gas of the Archean Earth. Methane and oxygen are not stable together in the same atmosphere. They react with each other through the mediation of hydroxyl radicals to produce carbon dioxide and water. Oxygen plus methane yields carbon dioxide plus water, a simple chemical equation with enormous climatic consequences. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, but it is a substantially weaker one than methane on a molecule-for-molecule basis. The conversion of the Archean methane greenhouse into a carbon dioxide greenhouse reduced the total greenhouse warming of the Earth's atmosphere at a time when the Sun was still approximately 20 to 25% dimmer than today. The result was a dramatic collapse of surface temperatures. The Huronian glaciation, the ice age that began approximately 2.4 billion years ago and lasted until approximately 2.1 billion years ago, a duration of approximately 300 million years, is the direct climatic consequence of the Great Oxidation Event. The Huronian glaciation is recorded in glacial sediments that are found in the Canadian Shield, in the rocks of the Transvaal Basin in South Africa, and in Archean terrains on multiple continents. And the geological evidence indicates that the glaciation was severe enough to have extended ice sheets into low latitudes, possibly reaching the tropics and constituting a snowball Earth event comparable to the later Sturtian and Marinoan glaciations of the Proterozoic. 300 million years of glaciation. To put that number in human terms, the entire history of complex animal life on Earth, from the Cambrian explosion 538 million years ago to the present, spans approximately 538 million years. The Huronian glaciation lasted 300 million years. It was an ice age longer than the entire age of fish, amphibians, reptiles, dinosaurs, and mammals combine. And it was caused, directly and unambiguously, by the oxygen produced as a byproduct of photosynthesis by the organisms that had lived through the preceding mass extinction. The geological record of the Huronian glaciation is preserved most completely in the Huronian supergroup of Ontario, Canada, a sequence of sedimentary rocks deposited along the margin of what is now the Superior Craton, approximately 2.4 to 2.2 billion years ago. The Huronian supergroup contains multiple distinct diamictite layers, the unsorted, chaotic sediment deposits that are the geological signature of glaciation, produced when glaciers grind rock into a heterogeneous mixture of particles that is deposited beneath or in front of the advancing ice. These diamictite layers, interbedded with sedimentary rocks deposited in warmer, shallow marine and fluvial environments, record a pattern of multiple glacial advances and retreats over the course of the Huronian glaciation, suggesting that the 300 million year long ice age was not a static frozen world, but a dynamic system of glacial cycles punctuated by intervals of partial warming. The Huronian glaciation eventually ended, as all ice ages do, through the operation of the carbonate-silicate cycle. Under the ice, volcanic activity continued to release carbon dioxide, and with the surface environment frozen, the rate of silicate weathering, the primary sink for atmospheric CO2, was dramatically reduced. Over millions of years, CO2 accumulated in the atmosphere until its greenhouse effect was sufficient to melt the ice and restore habitable surface temperatures. The deglaciation, when it came, was probably rapid and dramatic. The same kind of abrupt transition from frozen to warm that characterizes the end of the later snowball Earth events of the Proterozoic. But the world that emerged from the Huronian glaciation was fundamentally different from the world that had entered it. The chemistry of the atmosphere had been permanently transformed. The methane greenhouse that had sustained the Archean warm climate was gone, destroyed by the oxygen that continued to be produced by the cyanobacteria. The banded iron formations had largely stopped forming because the iron that had buffered the early oxygen had been exhausted. The dissolved iron of the Archean Ocean had been precipitated as iron oxide on the seafloor, leaving the ocean chemically impoverished in all relative to the Archean baseline. The organisms that had dominated the biosphere for 3 billion years had been largely eliminated, reduced to the scattered anaerobic refugia where their descendants survive today. And in the place of the old anoxic world, something new was beginning to take shape. The availability of free oxygen in the atmosphere and surface ocean opened a biological opportunity of breathtaking magnitude. Aerobic respiration. The metabolic process in which organic molecules are fully oxidized using molecular oxygen as the terminal electron acceptor is approximately 18 times more energetically efficient than anaerobic fermentation. This is not a minor efficiency improvement. It is a transformation in the energy budget available to living organisms. An organism that can respire aerobically can extract approximately 18 times more energy from the same quantity of food as an organism limited to anaerobic fermentation. This energetic advantage is what ultimately drove the evolution of the extraordinary biological complexity that characterizes the Proterozoic and Phanerozoic eons. The multicellular organisms, the differentiated cell types, the complex tissues, the nervous systems, the muscles, and ultimately the brains that make this video possible. The aerobic respiratory pathway had already evolved, as the MIT research of February 2026 shows. Hundreds of millions of years before the Great Oxidation Event, in the microbes living near cyanobacterial mats, where local oxygen concentrations were briefly elevated. But those early aerobic respirers were limited to the oxygen oases, the thin films of oxygenated water at the surface of cyanobacterial mats, the immediate vicinity of photosynthetically active cyanobacterial cells. After the Great Oxidation Event, oxygen pervaded the entire surface ocean and atmosphere, and the energetic advantage of aerobic respiration became available to any organism capable of evolving the necessary biochemical machinery. The result was an explosion of biochemical and ecological diversity that laid the foundation for everything that followed. The ozone layer is another consequence of the Great Oxidation Event that deserves specific attention because it transformed the habitability of the planetary surface in a way that was essential for the eventual colonization of land. Molecular oxygen in the upper atmosphere absorbs ultraviolet radiation from the sun, and through photochemistry, it is converted to ozone, the triatomic form of oxygen, O3, which absorbs ultraviolet radiation even more efficiently than molecular oxygen. The formation of a stratospheric ozone layer, as a consequence of atmospheric oxygen accumulation, created a UV shield that had not existed on the early Earth. Before the Great Oxidation Event, the land surface was bombarded by unfiltered ultraviolet radiation that would have been lethal to virtually any organism attempting to live there. The UV shield provided by the ozone layer was a prerequisite for the colonization of the land surface that eventually produced terrestrial ecosystems and, ultimately, the conditions for the evolution of large terrestrial animals, including humans. The most profound biological consequence of the Great Oxidation Event, however, was the eventual evolution of eukaryotic cells, the cells that make up every plant, animal, fungus, and protist alive today. The origin of the eukaryotic cell is one of the most remarkable events in the history of life, and it was made possible, directly or indirectly, by the oxygen revolution. The eukaryotic cell is fundamentally different from the prokaryotic cells that had dominated the biosphere for the first 2 billion years of life's history. It has a nucleus enclosed in a membrane, complex internal membrane systems, and, most significantly, mitochondria, the organelles that perform aerobic respiration and generate the adenosine triphosphate that powers all cellular processes in complex organisms. The origin of mitochondria is now understood with confidence. They are the evolutionary descendants of a proteobacterium, a type of oxygen-respiring bacterium that was engulfed by a larger host cell approximately 1.8 to 2 billion years ago, and instead of being digested, established a permanent symbiotic relationship with its host. The engulfed bacterium gradually lost most of its independent biological functions, transferring its genes to the host cell nucleus and becoming increasingly dependent on the host for everything except its core metabolic function, aerobic respiration. The host cell gained access to the aerobic respiratory machinery of its symbiont, dramatically increasing its energetic efficiency. This event, the endosymbiotic origin of mitochondria, is the biological foundation of all complex life on Earth. Without the Great Oxidation Event, there would be no mitochondria, because there would be no aerobic bacteria for a host cell to engulf and retain. The aerobic bacteria that became mitochondria had themselves evolved in response to the oxygen-rich world created by the cyanobacteria. The chain of causation runs directly from the cyanobacterial photosynthesis to the oxygen revolution to the aerobic bacteria to the mitochondria to the eukaryotic cell to every plant, animal, fungus, and protist that has ever lived. The debt that complex life owes to the organisms that nearly destroyed the biosphere 2.4 billion years ago is absolute and non-negotiable. Similarly, The chloroplasts of plant cells are the evolutionary descendants of cyanobacteria, a second endosymbiotic event in which a eukaryotic host cell engulfed a cyanobacterium and retained it as a photosynthetic organelle. Every plant cell on Earth contains the evolutionary descendants of the organisms that caused the Great Oxidation Event. The agricultural civilization that feeds 8 billion humans. The forests that regulate the planet's carbon cycle. The phytoplankton that produce approximately half of the Earth's atmospheric oxygen. All of this is the extended legacy of the cyanobacteria that inadvertently poisoned the Archean world. The story of the Great Oxidation Event is, at its deepest level, a story about the relationship between biological activity and planetary chemistry, and about the ways in which the most consequential planetary transformations have often been caused not by catastrophic external events, but by the routine metabolic activities of organisms going about the business of living and reproducing. The cyanobacteria did not set out to transform the world. They set out to capture sunlight and grow. The transformation was a consequence, not a goal. And the transformation, catastrophic as it was for the organisms that experienced it, was ultimately generative. It created the chemical conditions for a biological complexity that nothing in the Archean anoxic world could have anticipated or achieved. There is a modern parallel that is difficult to ignore. Human civilization is currently in the process of transforming the chemistry of the Earth's atmosphere, releasing carbon dioxide stored in geological reservoirs over hundreds of millions of years, and altering the greenhouse balance of the planet on a timescale of decades. The comparison with the Great Oxidation Event is imperfect in many ways. The specific chemistry is different, the timescale is different, and the outcome is genuinely uncertain. But the structural similarity is striking. In both cases, a biological entity pursuing its normal activities releases a waste product into the environment that has consequences extending far beyond the immediate context of that activity. In both cases, the chemical transformation is planetary in scale and involves the atmosphere, the oceans, and the carbon cycle. And in both cases, the organisms causing the transformation have no direct awareness of the consequences cascading through the planetary system as a result of their metabolic activity. The cyanobacteria, of course, had no choice and no awareness. Their photosynthesis was not a decision. It was chemistry. The oxygen was not a policy. It was a byproduct. There is no moral dimension to what the cyanobacteria did. But there is an important scientific lesson in their story: that biological activity at sufficient scale and duration can transform the chemistry of an entire planet, with consequences that are both catastrophic and ultimately generative. Consequences that no living organism at the time could have predicted or controlled. The great irony of the Great Oxidation Event is that the oxygen that destroyed the Archean biosphere was also the foundation on which everything that came after was built. The eukaryotic cells that arose in the oxygen-rich Proterozoic ocean were energetically capable of a degree of complexity that anaerobic metabolism could never support. The multicellular organisms that arose from those eukaryotic cells, the first animals, the first plants, the first fungi, were possible only because the mitochondria inside every one of their cells could harness the oxidative power of molecular oxygen to generate the energy budgets required for complex tissues and differentiated body plans. The Cambrian explosion that produced every major animal body plan, including the chordate lineage that eventually produced vertebrates and ultimately humans, was possible only in an oxygen-rich ocean whose chemistry had been created by the cyanobacteria 2 billion years earlier. You breathe the waste product of a 2 billion-year-old extinction event. Your mitochondria are the evolutionary descendants of bacteria that evolved to exploit that waste product. Your complexity, your consciousness, your capacity to watch this video and understand what it is telling you, all of it is a consequence of the most catastrophic biological event in the history of life on Earth. Now let me tell you what I think is most remarkable about this story. Not just what happened, but what it means. Science has a tendency to tell the story of evolution as a series of improvements, each step building on the last in a progressive march toward complexity and intelligence. The great oxidation event disrupts this narrative in the most fundamental way possible. The most important transformation in the history of life was not a progressive improvement. It was a catastrophe, an accident, a byproduct. The cyanobacteria did not evolve oxygenic photosynthesis in order to create the conditions for complex life. They evolved it because it worked better than the alternatives for capturing sunlight and growing. The oxygen was garbage. The transformation it caused was unintended. And yet, out of that accidental chemical catastrophe, out of the poisoning of an entire biosphere, the extinction of most of the life that had ever lived, and an ice age that lasted 300 million years, came everything. The most recent research deepens this picture further. The MIT finding of February 2026 shows that even the delay of 560 million years between the evolution of oxygen production and the accumulation of oxygen in the atmosphere was partly a biological phenomenon. Organisms had evolved to consume the oxygen almost as fast as it was produced, maintaining the chemical status quo against the force that would eventually overwhelm it. And the Okayama finding of November 2025 shows that the eventual breakthrough was determined partly by the declining availability of nickel and urea, geochemical changes driven by the slowly evolving tectonic and thermal history of the planet, rather than by any biological strategy or adaptation. The great oxidation event happened when it happened, not because biology planned it, but because a set of geochemical constraints that had been suppressing the accumulation of oxygen gradually relaxed to the point where biology could no longer be contained. There is something both humbling and inspiring about this. The largest single transformation of the planetary biosphere in Earth's history was caused by organisms that had no awareness of what they were doing, unfolded on a timescale of hundreds of millions of years, and produced consequences that were simultaneously catastrophic and generative beyond anything that any organism alive at the time could have imagined. The lesson is not that biological activity inevitably produces beneficial outcomes. The Archaean anaerobes who were exterminated by the oxygen would not have found the eventual emergence of complex life much consolation. The lesson is that the planetary system is connected in ways that are not immediately visible to the organisms operating within it, and that the consequences of biological activity can cascade through that system in ways that transform the entire context of life over geological time. We are the inheritors of a catastrophe. The oxygen in your lungs right now is the legacy of the greatest mass extinction in the history of life. The mitochondria generating the energy for every thought you are having are the descendants of bacteria that evolved to exploit a toxic waste product. The ozone layer protecting you from ultraviolet radiation is made of the same substance that poisoned the Archaean world. The transition from the Archaean anoxic world to the Proterozoic oxygen world was not instantaneous. And the intermediate state, sometimes called the boring billion or the Proterozoic stasis, covering approximately 1.8 to 800 million years ago, represents a fascinating chapter in Earth's biological history that is only now beginning to be understood. During this interval, atmospheric oxygen levels had risen from essentially zero to perhaps 1 to 10% of the modern level, enough to support aerobic life in the surface ocean and at the land surface, but insufficient to support the kind of energetically demanding complex multicellular organisms that would appear in the Cambrian. The deep ocean remained anoxic or euxinic, sulfide-rich rather than oxygen-rich, for most of this interval, limiting the habitats available for aerobic organisms and restricting the ecological space available for biological innovation. The ozone layer that formed as a consequence of the atmospheric oxygen accumulation was initially thin and incomplete, providing partial but not full protection against ultraviolet radiation at the land surface. The land surface remained largely uninhabited during most of the Proterozoic, a vast bare rock landscape of weathering continental crust with no plant life, no soil organisms, no complex terrestrial ecosystem. The colonization of the land surface would have to wait for a second major oxygen increase, approximately 500 to 800 million years ago, during the Neo-Proterozoic oxygenation event, which raised atmospheric oxygen to levels sufficient to support a complete and effective ozone layer and the higher energetic demands of large complex multicellular organisms. The eukaryotic cell itself, the cell type with a membrane-bound nucleus and mitochondria, evolved during the Proterozoic stasis, approximately 2 billion to 1.8 billion years ago. Its origin remains one of the most debated topics in evolutionary biology. The leading hypothesis, championed by the late Lynn Margulis starting in the 1960s and now supported by extensive molecular evidence, is that the mitochondria of eukaryotic cells are the evolutionary descendants of a proteobacterium that was engulfed by a host cell belonging to the domain Archaea. The merger was not voluntary. The proteobacterium was presumably ingested as a food item, but instead of being digested, it survived and established a metabolic partnership with its host. The host gained access to the aerobic respiratory machinery of the proteobacterium. The proteobacterium gained the stable intracellular environment and the metabolic products of the host. Over hundreds of millions of years, The proteobacterium's genome was progressively reduced through the transfer of genes to the host nucleus, until the endosymbiont had become so integrated with its host that it could no longer survive independently. That endosymbiont is what we call the mitochondrion. The evidence for the endosymbiotic origin of mitochondria is now overwhelming. Mitochondria have their own DNA, a small circular genome that contains genes for some of the mitochondria's own proteins, a remnant of the much larger genome of the free-living proteobacterium ancestor. Mitochondria have their own ribosomes, which are more similar to bacterial ribosomes than to the cytoplasmic ribosomes of eukaryotic cells. The sequence of mitochondrial genes is most closely related to the alpha proteobacteria, a group that includes the Rickettsia bacteria that cause typhus and Rocky Mountain spotted fever in humans, the same group from which the ancient endosymbiont was derived. Mitochondria divide by binary fission, the same mechanism used by bacteria, rather than by the spindle-based cell division used by the eukaryotic nucleus. Every structural and molecular detail of the mitochondrion points unambiguously to its bacterial origin. The second endosymbiotic event, the engulfment of a cyanobacterium by a eukaryotic host cell to form the first chloroplast, occurred somewhat later, approximately 1.5 billion years ago, and gave rise to the first photosynthetic eukaryote, the ancestor of all modern plants and algae. The chloroplasts of modern plant cells are the direct descendants of cyanobacteria, the very organisms that caused the great oxidation event. Every green leaf on every plant on Earth contains organelles that are the evolutionary heirs of the microbes that poisoned the Archean biosphere. The irony is complete and total. Everything complex and conscious and aware on this planet exists because a microscopic organism 2.4 billion years ago changed the chemistry of the atmosphere, probably without any awareness that it was doing so, and set in motion a chain of consequences that eventually led, through 2 billion years of biological elaboration, to you. The great oxidation event also transformed the chemistry of the land surface in ways that had profound consequences for the subsequent evolution of complex life. Before the GOE, the land surface was chemically reducing. Rocks weathered slowly under carbonic acid rain in the absence of oxidative weathering, and the chemical products of weathering were dominated by reduced minerals. After the GOE, atmospheric oxygen made oxidative weathering possible for the first time. Iron in surface rocks was oxidized from its reduced ferrous form to its oxidized ferric form, producing the red coloration that characterizes oxidized continental soils and sediments. The appearance of red beds, continental sedimentary deposits with the distinctive red color of oxidized iron, in the geological record approximately 2.3 to 2.2 billion years ago, is one of the most direct and visible geological signatures of the Great Oxidation Event. And the red beds of this age are found in multiple locations on multiple continents, confirming the global nature of the atmospheric transformation. The oxidative weathering of continental rocks also had important geochemical consequences. Sulfide minerals in continental rocks, pyrite and other iron sulfides, were oxidized by atmospheric oxygen to produce sulfate, which was carried by rivers into the ocean. The increase in oceanic sulfate concentration that followed the Great Oxidation Event fundamentally changed the chemistry of the ocean, enabling the expansion of sulfate-reducing bacteria into new environments and altering the cycling of sulfur through the biosphere in ways that persist to the present day. The modern sulfate-rich ocean, in which dissolved sulfate concentrations are approximately 28 millimolar, is itself a legacy of the Great Oxidation Event and the 2 billion years of oxidative continental weathering that followed it. Phosphorus cycling was also transformed. In the anoxic Archean Ocean, phosphorus was efficiently recycled from marine sediments back into the water column through the reduction of iron oxides by anaerobic bacteria. Iron oxide minerals that had adsorbed phosphate during their formation released it when reduced, delivering phosphate back to the water where it could be used by photosynthetic organisms. The partial oxygenation of the ocean following the GOE altered this recycling in complex ways that geochemists are still working to understand, with consequences for marine productivity that extended throughout the Proterozoic. The availability of phosphorus, the ultimate limiting nutrient for marine primary productivity, was deeply connected to the oxygen history of the ocean in ways that linked the chemical evolution of the atmosphere to the biological evolution of the biosphere at every stage. The nitrogen cycle was similarly transformed. In the anoxic Archean Ocean, fixed nitrogen, the biologically available form of nitrogen that organisms need to build proteins and nucleic acids, was recycled primarily through the activity of nitrogen-fixing bacteria and the anaerobic degradation of organic nitrogen compounds. Nitrification, the oxidation of ammonium to nitrite and nitrate by specialized aerobic bacteria, was impossible in the anoxic Archean Ocean because it requires molecular oxygen. After the Great Oxidation Event, nitrification became possible in the oxygenated surface ocean, producing nitrate that could be used by photosynthetic organisms and that could also be consumed by denitrifying bacteria, converting nitrate back to nitrogen gas. The full nitrogen cycle, with its multiple oxidation states and the aerobic and anaerobic microbial communities that cycle nitrogen through them, is a product of the oxygen revolution. The nitrogen cycle we depend on today for the fertility of agricultural soils did not exist before the cyanobacteria changed the world. These geochemical transformations of iron, sulfur, phosphorus, and nitrogen cycling collectively represent the complete reorganization of the planetary biogeochemical system in the aftermath of the Great Oxidation Event. The Archean biogeochemical world, built around reducing chemistry and anaerobic metabolisms, was replaced by the Proterozoic and eventually the Phanerozoic world, built around oxidizing chemistry and aerobic metabolisms. Every major biogeochemical cycle that sustains the modern biosphere, the carbon cycle, the nitrogen cycle, the sulfur cycle, the phosphorus cycle, the iron cycle, was transformed by the oxygen revolution. We live today not merely in a biosphere created by the cyanobacteria, but in a chemical world created by them. That is not a simple story. It is not a comforting story. But it is, by any measure, one of the most extraordinary stories that the geological record has ever told.